All right, we're starting here on the bottom of Kufchav Gimel Medbet, three lines from the bottom. Meitiv Rabbi Yirmiyah. Rabbi Yirmiyah is questioning that which was stated above, which was Rav Huna had qualified the Mishnah that we had brought before, and then Rish Lakish had qualified that. And this question is on those qualifications. Just to remind ourselves that we had Amram Huna Mishum Rabbi Shum Bar Rabbi Yossi. The only way that when you rip the talit, ruba, the robe of it, that it's considered to be tahor, and it's no longer tmeah, is if when the robe that you cut, the remaining piece, is not the size that would be sufficient for a maporet, which is either a turban or an apron. So if there was a slice that was left, the miut that is left is of that size, then it still would be tmeah, because it's still functional, the talit, in its original purpose, even though you've ripped the robe. Aval shi'er ba'kedei maporet chibur. If you have that much left, then it's considered to be attached, and then you either could sew back the upper part, and then that would make it a whole talit again, or even the lower part, since you can utilize it still intact the way it is now, it is not tahor. That is with regards to the talit, the qualification. Then Reish Lakish qualifies that statement and said, I'm a Reish Lakish, l'mshanu el talit. That's only true when you're dealing with the beged. Aval or, if you're dealing with leather, chalem, that is, the meaning of the word means it heals itself, whether that means that it sticks back together, or the way Rashi describes it over here, because it's firm and it's stiff, if you leave the miut that's there, you can stitch up the robe that was torn, and then the leather will go back to its original purpose. It can be used the way it was originally, and won't lose its integrity just because it's been ripped. Both because the bottom piece that's left, the miut that's left, holds it and keeps it firm, as well as when you stitch it, the leather will stick together or tighten together, and that'll make it work. So those are the two qualifications that we had of the Mishnah, one of the Mishnah, and then one of the qualification of the Mishnah. And on that, we have Meitiv Rabbi Yirmiyah. Now, just as a background for today's daf, we're going to quote two Mishnayot from Masechet Kelim. I think just to do a quick background to those Mishnayot, the Mishnayot are brought out of order in the Gemara. It brings Perikei Mishnah Zayin, and then it goes back and brings Perikei Mishnah Aleph. Perikei Masechet Kelim is speaking about a tanur, which is an oven in the time of the Gemara, that are used for baking bread inside of them. And the way that their ovens looked were that they were cone-shaped in nature, and that had a hole on the top, and then it widened as it went down to the base, and then usually there was a little opening on the side, in order to kindle the fire or light things inside of that cone. Now, that's just a cone-shaped kli cheres, usually made out of earthenware, that they use for the oven. In order to make the oven more effective, they used to put the oven either on top of stones, over a hole of some sort, or even on the ground on top of the stones, and then they would plaster the oven, both to seal it to the ground, as well as then they would plaster it on the sides of the oven. That was both to give integrity to the earthenware because of the heat that was going to be placed inside of it, as well as to thicken the walls so that it maintained the heat and kept the heat inside because of the insular nature of the thickened walls. That which you put on the outside and that is plastered around the base is called tfela. That's tfela, is that plaster or that teat that they place all the way around it. It might have been done to make it so that it was, instead of being a cone, it looked like a cylinder. And so the plaster thickened towards the top versus at the bottom where it was thinner. And again, that was to maintain the heat or insulate the heat inside of it. Generally, the tanur was used for making bread, which is that they put the bread up on the walls internally of the oven. And it had to be hot enough that the bread would not stick to the walls, but rather would bake fast enough that they could scrape it off the walls easily. So that's the nature of a tanur. And over here in the Mishnah Aleph in Perek Hay, the Mishnah describes tanur, tchilato arba'a. The beginning of a tanur means that the minimum shiur for something to be classified as a tanur is four tfachim. Vishi arav. In addition, the remainder of a tanur is arba'a tfachim. Divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir's view is that the minimum size for something to be classified as a tanur is four tfachim, as well as if you have a tanur that's greater in size than that, if it remains of that tanur, meaning that the tanur somehow was cut or destroyed, as long as four tefachim remain of the tanur, then it is a functional tanur, and it still can be mekabel tumah, or if it's tameh, it remains tameh. The chamim omrim, the chamim disagree with that. They say, b'med dvarim omrim bigadol. That's only true in a larger tanur. Aval bikatan, in a small tanur, tilato koshu. to be any size, a koshu. Later on in the Gemara, Rashi will say that a katan was an oven that was made for kids. In other words, it was the original Fisher Price ovens that they made so that kids could play with the ovens when their parents were also doing the real oven. So that's what Rashi claims about the katan. But tchilat al koshu, the Gemara will also define koshu as being a tefach. But we'll get to that in the Gemara later. Vishi arav, and the remainder is rubo, the majority. The way that we have it in the girsa of the Mishnayot, shiruv rubo is modifying the katan, which is that the katan is a koshu. And then what is the remainder that is classified as an oven? As long as the rove of that remains, it's still classified as an oven according to the Chachamim. And then there is another qualification, which is mishitigamer melachto, when it's finished. I mean that it only gets a classification of an oven once it's completed. That means that it's fired in the kiln and possibly might have to also be used once or fired up inside of it or have the tefillah put on it. That's the remainder of the Mishnah, but not the topic of today's Gemara. But because the Mishnah has the order of being Shiarov Rubo first, which makes it that's modifying the Katan, then Mishitigamer Melachto is modifying both statements of the Chachamim, both the Gadol and the Katan. They're only valid as ovens, Mishitigamer Melachto, once they are finished. We'll see in our Gemara, and I'll point it out to you later, that they reversed the Girsa there, and that has major implications in terms of the Gemara's understanding of the Mishnayot. Later on, in Mishnah Zayin, we have another Mishnah that's speaking about a tanur, and says tanur shenitma. If you have a tanur that already became tameh, keitzed mitaharim oto. How do you make it tahor? So here, you already have it tameh, and you want to remove the tumah, or you want to stop it from having that tumah. So the Mishnah says, der choko lishlosha. You divide it into thirds, vigorer et tefela adjehe ba'aretz. And then you peel off the plaster that's on it until it reaches the ground. Over here, Adjehe Ba'aretz, there are three different ways to look at Adjehe Ba'aretz, because it could be modifying all of the statements that were beforehand. It could be Adjehe Ba'aretz means Gorer Tatfeila, Adjehe Ba'aretz. That's Rashi's view of what the meaning is that you peel off the plaster until it reaches the ground. You have to peel the plaster all the way down to the ground. Whether that's just in the parts where it was cut, or it means the entirety of the tanur, you have to peel the plaster down all the way to the ground. That's Rashi's view. The Adjehe Ba'aretz could also be going back on Cholko L'Shlosha. It could be the cut. It's saying that the cut has to go Adjehe Ba'aretz. You have to cut the tanur from top to bottom, and then the cut must reach Adjehe Ba'aretz, all the way down to the ground. Or the third possibility is that we noted before that the tanur is made in such a manner that they put the tefillah, they put the plaster around it on the outside, but they also plaster the bottom to the ground so that it's actually now fixed to the ground. And that could be the meaning over here. We go reret tefela, and you take off the tefela, ajay baretz, and you also take off the tefela that's underneath, or that's plastering to the ground, so now that the oven's just sitting on the ground, it no longer has any plaster between it and the ground, or sealing it to the ground. So that's three different ways to interpret it, and it's somewhat influential in how you understand the Gemara. Rabbi Meir Omer, ein tzarich legoret tefela, lo ajay baretz. You don't have to scrape off the plaster, and Lo Adjehe Ba'aretz. So now, depending on what you thought Adjehe Ba'aretz was before, then Lo Adjehe Ba'aretz would be then a statement against the Chachamim's position before. For Rashi, since Gorer Tetfela is only being modified by Adjehe Ba'aretz, means that you peel it all the way down to the bottom of the ground, then of course, when Rabbi Meir says, Inu Tzarech L'Gorer Tetfela, then obviously you don't have to do it Adjehe Ba'aretz. So it's Lo Zu Atzu. Not only do you not have to take it down to the ground, you don't have to take it off at all. So that would be the way to read it according to Rashi. According to those that say you have to slice it all the way down to the ground, he would be suggesting you don't have to slice it all the way to the ground. And according to those that say that it means taking it off the ground, the plaster from underneath, you won't have to remove the plaster underneath. Ella, mima'ato bibifnim arba'at tvachim. If they cut it down until it is less than four tvachim. And Rabbi Meir seems to be leaning on his opinion in the first Mishnah, which he says that once you're below four tvachim, there's no din of tanur anymore. And so Rabbi Meir has a different definition of tanur than the Chachamim, it seems. And therefore, he allows you to leave some pieces left, whereby it still will not become tameh. So those are the two Mishnayot that the Gemara is going to quote today. What isn't clear in both of these Mishnayot, and which Gemara is going to spend time on, is when the Gemara speaks about over here, Shiarav Arba'ah, in the first Mishnah, as well as Choko, you split into thirds, as to which direction the cut is going, in each of these Mishnayot. When you say that there's only four tefachim left, where are those four tefachim? And we say you cut into threes, where are the cuts that you're making for the threes? Is there a stira between these mishnayot, or is there a way to reconcile it? Part of that might have to do with Achehei Ba'aretz, which is there it seemed to indicate that, according to those that explain Achehei Ba'aretz is a cut that goes down to the ground, that they're speaking about a vertical cut, and maybe that's part of the solution to the problem. All right, so that's just background to what we're about to do now. And now it is Meitiv Rabbi Yirmiyah. Rabbi Yirmiyah asked on Reish Lakish's position over here that when it comes to leather, if you cut the rove, that the miut still holds it intact, and that miut that holds it intact then makes it that it's not tahor because you can reassemble according to Rashi, or it's firm enough that it'll stick together according to others, and therefore it's not considered to be something that's no longer a kli, and it will remain tamei or can still be mekabel tuma. But by a tanur shinitma ketzad mitarinoto, when you have a tanur that is tamei, how do you make it tahor? Kokol shlosha, you split it into thirds. Vigoreret atfela achehei baretz. This is what we just discussed. That you take off the plaster until it goes down to the ground. Again, whether that means the plaster to the ground, the cut to the ground, or taking off the plaster underneath it, like Rashi says that you have to let it sit on the ground. Rabbi Meir Omer, Einu tzarich lo ligroret atfela v'lo achehei baretz elam ma'ato bifneim me'arba tfachim. You just have to reduce it below four tfachim. Gemara says ki me'atle midaled miu tahor. As long as you get below four tfachim, it is tahor. Amai. Why is that the case? Lema ha chalim v'koi. Why don't you say the same thing by this oven as you said by the leather, which is that the leather, because it's firm at the bottom or structurally sound at the bottom, then the top can be reassembled or is considered to be together. Why don't you say the same thing over here by the furnace? Once you cut it down, if it still has the plaster around it, because Rabbi Meir does not require you to take off the plaster, plus, you're not cutting it all the way down to the ground, so there's a miut, at least, that's left there. Why isn't that structurally sound enough to make it that it's still functional, and it should remain a kli? So how could Rabbi Meir say that it's no longer a tamei, when it sounds like over here that, according to Reish Lakish, this should be something that is still classified as a kli? Now, the easiest way to understand this or to explain this is simply to say that there's no connection between the two of these items. But Tosafot over here says, Hachanami, hai tanur, dekaya de tfela, this tanur that's being held up by the plaster that's around it, lo choshiv, vavi keor, shalonit chaber. And it's similar to leather that has yet to be reattached, or hasn't been attached. So Tosafot is trying to explain, or trying to give some sort of sense as to why this is the same as the leather case before. And what he's suggesting is that the tanur, which just has the tfela, but the cheres has been cut, but there's still a minimum base around it that's intact, that should be the same as the case of the leather. And Reish Lakish said that that means it's still tamei and not tahor. But over here, Rabbi Meir believes by the tanur that that is fine to make it tahor. So Amalei Rava, Rava answers Rabbi Yirmiyah, Ve'ema midrabanan, gorer tatfela, shehei baretz. Wait a minute, you're bringing a question for Rabbi Meir. All Reish Lakish needs to say is, I hold like the chachamim. And the chachamim over here say that you have to cut it all the way down to the ground and take off the plaster all the way down to the ground. So that works well for Reish Lakish. They don't think it's enough like Rabbi Meir. They need you to go much further, and therefore they're basically upholding what Reish Lakish said. Ela amarava hachi kamar. This is what you need to say. Tanur shinit ma, tanur that became tamei, keitzad mitaharinoto. How do you make it tahor? Dire akol chokol lishlusha. Everybody holds. That means both Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim hold. Once it's Tamei, the way to make it Tahor is to cut it into thirds and then peel off all of the plaster until you get down to the ground, again with all the different interpretations we saw before. If you want it to be that when your Tanur is not Tamei, but you want to prevent it from becoming Tamei, how do you do this? Then you divide it into thirds. Vigorer etat fela, and you peel off the plaster, achehei baretz. Rabbi Meir Omer, einu tzarich, you don't need to do so much. Lo ligro etat fela, lo achehei baretz, ele ma'ato mibifnim barba tvachim. You take it down all the way to four tvachim. So first of all, what Rava does is he dismisses Rabbi Yirmiyah's question on Reish Lakish by simply saying, you've only looked at one of the two Tanaim in the Mishnah. Reish Lakish is aligning himself with the Chachamim, and you're questioning Rabbi Reish Lakish from the Rabbi Meir. And there's no necessity to worry about Rabbi Meir if you have the Chachamim on your side. That's the first thing Rava does. The second thing Rava does is a much more difficult step. And that is, he then says, that both Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim agree with Reish Lakish. And that is because he then says that to reread the Mishnah and say that the Mishnah is kind of missing a conjunctive step, which is the Mishnah begins, and the girsa of the Mishnah, as we quote over here, was Tanur Shenitma. The Tanur, that was Tamei, Ketzed Mitarinoto. How are you Mitaharit? And then the Mishnah goes on to have that machlok between the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir. What Rava suggests over here is that there was a missing little piece in between, which is, if you have an oven that's Tamei, how do you make it Tahor? You do what the Chachamim say in the Mishnah, that everybody agrees to, and even Rabbi Meir agrees that that's the case. Then, he says, the next step of the Mishnah is, if you have a Tanur that is Tahor, how do you keep it Tahor and prevent it from becoming Tamei? That's the next step of the Machloka between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. In doing such, then Rava now makes it that both Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim agree with Reish Lakish. That is because now the beginning of that Mishnah is just speaking about Ketzad Mitarinoto, and Mitarinoto is the case that Reish Lakish is addressing with regards to leather, and now Rava is suggesting that it works according to both of them, because everybody agrees now that you have to cut it all the way to the ground, peel off all the plaster, and everybody agrees with Reish Lakish. What's interesting now is that once you do that, you make it that Reish Lakish fits in according to both the Chachamim, Rabbi Meir, but now you left Rabbi Yochanan out in the cold, because Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with Reish Lakish's position. And now you have nobody in the Mishnah that holds like Rabbi Yochanan. So why did Rava do that? That's the question the Marsha raises over here with regards to the flow of the Gemara. Why did Rava, after protecting Reish Lakish from Rabbi Yirmiyah's question, why did he go a step further and make the whole Mishnah like Reish Lakish and ignore Rabbi Yochanan's position entirely? Which is difficult, because generally, Machloket, Rabbi Yochanan, and Reish Lakish, the Lacha is like, there are Acharonim, like the Levari and the Chazanish, who want to explain over here that Rava is going through two stages in the Gemara. In the first stage, he's just saying, look, according to you, Rabbi Yirmiyah, you think that the Tanur and the leather are the same type of case. According to you, and you're asking a question on Reish Lakish from Rabbi Meir, that's not a question. He can hold like the Chachamim. But I, personally, Rava, I disagree with you fundamentally. I don't think there's any correlation between the leather and the oven. And therefore, there's not even a question to start with on Reish Lakish. But let me explain to you what I think is going on with the oven over here. And the oven is completely different, because according to him, to be mitaher the oven, even Rabbi Meir agrees you have to cut it all the way down to the bottom. And therefore, it's nothing like the case of leather, because I think that the only way to get something to be tahor is to cut it to the bottom and to peel off all the plaster, which then is no longer similar to the case of leather, where there's still a miut that's left intact. And then he just says, the case when we're speaking about the machloket Chachamim Rabbi Meir, that's a case where you want to prevent it from coming to Tamei. That's not similar to the case of leather. And in that way, you take this sting of what Rava's saying over here out, because Rava, in the end, is saying, Rabbi Yirmiyah, I first of all think your question's not a question, even according to your own shita. And then, I don't even agree with your shita. I don't even think there's a connection between the oven and the leather case. And therefore, the question doesn't even get off the ground. And then, he's not favoring Reish Lakish over Rabbi Yochanan, because it's not even relevant to Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish anymore. That's the way you would have to explain the Gemara. The only interesting thing is that, given that Rava explains the Mishnah this way, you would expect that some of the Mefarshei Mishnah would explain it that way. Nobody explains the Mishnah like that. And truthfully, it's against the Pashtuta Mishnah, which says, Tanur Shenitma, Ketzed Mitarinoto, the simple way to read the Mishnah is that it continues. I think Rava might be trying to make a point, not necessarily that he wanted to change the Mishnah and have it reread, but I think it's the point again that he wants to tell Rav Yirmiyah that the cases of ovens and leather cannot be compared, and they're not similar cases, and therefore your question is moot because it never gets off the ground. That's the first part of the Gemara. Then the Gemara says, Amar Mar, Choko L'Shlosha. You divide it into thirds. Viriminu. Now they bring the Mishnah from the beginning of that perek, which is Tanur Shetchilato Arba'a Vishiarav Arba'a Devei Rabbi Meir. In order to be classified as a Tanur, you have to have a minimum of four Tfachim. And if you have a Tanur that's bigger than that, if it's cut down to the point where there's still four Tfachim left, then it's still an oven, Devei Rabbi Meir. Chamim Amrim Bamed Vamim Amurim. When is that true? Begadol. When you have a large oven. Avo Bekatan. Tchilato koshu. You have a small oven, then any size counts. Mishitiga mer melachto sheirav birubo. This is what I noted to you before, that the Bavli here has a different girsa in the Mishnah, and they have tiga mer melachto first, and then sheirav birubo, which would actually change the meaning. Tosafot kind of hints at that up above, where he speaks about this change in the girsa, Because the way that the Mishnah has the Girsa, it's She'arev Rubo first, and then Mitigamer Melachto. That means that the She'arev Rubo was modifying the Katan, the small oven, and Tigamer Melachto was modifying both ovens. But the way that Bavli has it over here, Mishitigamer Melachto is only modifying the Katan, and then She'arev Rubo Rubo is modifying both the Katan and the Gadol, the She'arev Rubo, and that's going to present some of the problem. Now the Gemara says, V'kama Koshu. What is a koshu? You would have thought a koshu means a koshu. Amrei de Bei Rabbi Yanai tefach. This is what I mentioned before, that the Bavli thinks that the koshu, when there is a lav dafka koshu, it means a tefach. The minimum size of an oven is a tefach. Shekein usim tanurim beno tefach. Because they make such tanurim that are that size. Because that's the size, according to Rashi, that they make for the kids to play with. Amar now is midayek out of Rabbi Meir's statement. Taima d'ika shiarav dalid. The only reason that it is Tamei, according to Rabbi Meir, is because there's four tefachim left. Haleka she'arav dalid tahor. If there wasn't four tefachim left, then it would be tahor. Now Rashi claims the question is because once you've defined Rabbi Meir's position, you understand the chachamim that by a gadol, the chachamim agree that Rabbi Meir, that the remainder is dalid. But the Mishnah that we quoted before, Mishnah Zayin in that parak says you have to cut it into thirds. You have to cut into three and not into two. The reason that they want you to cut into three and not into two, to make sure that even though it's not dalid, they also require that it not be the rove left. Because if you cut it into two, then by definition, one half has the rove in it. If you slice it into three equal parts, by definition, no single part there has the rove in it. And so it seems to be the Mishnah's threshold over there, according to the Chachamim, is rove to make a makel Rabbi Meir. Because the Meir over there, who's Mekev, Omer, Enu Tzarich, Elamato, Bibifne, Midalid, the Mishnah in Mishnah Zion that says, Rabbi Meir says, all you have to do is cut it down until it's fourth Fachim. Mechlau de Rabbona Nami Bahablige. Sounds like the Rabbana even arguing that point. Tafa Gabaloya Vishever Dalid, Afilo Hakibinan, Dolo Yavi Ruba. That even though it's not Dalid, they also require that it not be the Rove. So what Rashi is suggesting is that there is a stira here between the Mishnah Aleph and the Mishnah Zion. So how come in the Mishnah Zion, do they say that you have to get it below the rove? And over here, they say that you have to get it below four tefachim. It's clear here that there seems to be a distinction between their opinions in these Mishnayot. The Gemara answers, it's kind of the way we explained it originally. It's Amrei Hotam, Titzalke, Mitzalik, Hacha, De'avde, Gistera. The difference is which direction you're cutting in. In the Mishnah that is speaking at the beginning of Perek Mishnah Aleph, the one that we just quoted now, that's speaking about when you cut it across the width of the oven, from left to right. When you cut it that way, that's what this Mishnah is speaking about. Mishnah Zion that we quoted before is speaking about when you cut it vertically, from top to bottom. And over there, you require shlosha. So, in essence, what you have here is different mechanisms or methods for ruining the oven. And so, in Mishnah Aleph, or the way that they're ruining the oven is by slicing the top off. So over there, Rabbi Meir says, that you have to get it below four tefachim. If there's only a base of four tefachim left, then you don't have an oven anymore. According to Rabbi Meir, the minimum size of an oven is four tefachim. If you get it below that four tefachim, no matter if you started that way, or if you cut something down to the point where it's below four tefachim, neither of those are classified as an oven. And that's why it's tahor now. Now the Chachamim say we agree by Tanur Gadol that that's the case, but by Tanur Katan, you have to use Rov as that threshold. As long as you get it below Rov, then you're okay. But that's all slicing it across as a cross-section, meaning from left to right across it, and you're leaving whatever is left below at the base of the oven. That's what we're speaking about over here. In the Mishnah, in Mishnah Zayin, where it says you have to cut it in three places, which sounds like you just need to make sure that absolutely no rove is left there, because if you only cut it in two places, that means you basically divided it either in half, or you cut it, and it's impossible that one side would not be bigger than the other side. There will always be a rove that's left there. That's what bothered us about that explanation of that Mishnah. So what the Mishnah requires you to do is cut it in three places. That means by definition, no one piece is going to have the rove left if you cut it evenly into three pieces. And that's when you're cutting it from top to bottom vertically. That's the requirement over there. There, the Chachamim speak about rove and don't speak about arba'at vachim, because there you're speaking about vertical cuts, not horizontal cuts. In horizontal cuts, the fourth vachim is important by bigger tanurim, and in smaller tanurim, the rove is important. But by the case in Mishnah Zion, where you're cutting it in thirds, the reason you have to do that is to prevent the rove, because you're cutting it vertically. And therefore, it's important that you make sure that there's no robe that's left in there. And there's a different threshold for size when you're cutting vertically than when you're cutting horizontally. And that's the way to reconcile between these different Mishnayot, that the Mishnah Zayin is speaking about vertical cuts. And over there, you have to cut it down, according to the Chachamim, top to bottom, and leave no robe in any piece that is surrounding, in the circumference of the item, no robe pieces left. Rabbi Meir, quote-unquote, the Shita Toh, says that you only have to cut it down until the less than four tefachim left at the bottom. Because when there's a rim around the bottom that is less than four tefachim, according to Rabbi Meir, that's no longer classified as an oven anymore. So you don't have to cut it all the way down to the bottom. You just cut it down until you have less than four tefachim left. And then Rabbi Meir Lishita Toh says that's not an oven anymore. Now the Chachamim still require you to cut to the bottom, even though over here they say that four tefachim is enough, like Rabbi Meir with a bigger oven, four tefachim is enough. The reason is because they think that when you cut vertically, it's different than when you cut horizontally. When you cut horizontally, you're right, Rabbi Meir, if you have less than four tefachim left, then it's ruined because it's not seated properly, as Rashi says. But when you cut it vertically, it's still the pressure of the cone-shaped item pushes them together, or holds them together, especially Rabbi Meir says it, where you leave the plaster on, and therefore they require a cutting all the way down to the bottom, and the removal of the plaster so that it doesn't remain intact or doesn't stay connected together. And that's why you have a difference in opinion of the Chachamim in the Mishnah Zayin, where you're cutting vertically, versus Mishnah Aleph, where you're cutting horizontally, and that'll explain the difference between their opinions. Now, Amar Mar, Shiara Birubo. So the Gemara says, Rubo de Tefach, the Maichazi. What does a robe of a tefach do? You just said before that the minimum shiur for a tanur katan is a tefach. So now if you tell me, according to the Chachamim, that the robe is modifying that, then what does a robe of a tefach do for you? Because tefach is the minimum size of a tanur. If you're below that, then you're not a tanur anymore. So having the robe, why is that still considered to be tameh? So Amar Abaye, Sharei Gadol Birubo. Sharei Rubo does not just go on the katan. It goes on the Gadol as well. That's what I pointed out to you, that the Bavli's Girsa in the Mishnah is different. It puts Mishigamer Melachto first, and then Sherev Birubo second, to tell you that Sherev Birubo is modifying not only the small oven, but even the big oven. As opposed to the Mishnah, if you read it simply, then the Mishnah has Sherev Birubo first, and then Tigamer Melachto second. And Sherev Birubo is modifying just the Katan and not the big one. Now, the Mishnah can be read that way without a problem, because if you read the Koshu as being literally a Koshu, then it makes sense. If a koshu is okay, then robe of a koshu also is okay, because a koshu is okay. And that would be fine to understand it. But here, where the Bavli gives a minimum size for the koshu as a tefach, that means that below that size, it's not classified as an oven. So then robe of a tefach is not meaningful. And therefore, the Bavli has the girsa flipped, and has the sheirev birubo modifying not only the small oven, but even the big oven. Now that presents a problem. V'amei rabbanon arba'ah. Didn't the rabbanon say four tefachim is the amount that you need in order for it not to be considered a oven, because they don't disagree with Rabbi Meir? They say, that Rabbi Meir is right, that's by a gadol. That means they agree with Rabbi Meir that if you cut it down to less than four tefachim, it's not an oven anymore. So how can you use rove if four tefachim is the threshold? Where it says, lokasha, habitanura bar tisha, habitanura bar shiva. That depends on whether the oven is nine tefachim, or the oven is seven tefachim. Now, you could read this one of two ways, and of course, the Rishonim argue about how to read it. Rashi and Tosafot say that the Chachamim are the kula over here, that they're makil in both situations. So when you have an oven that's 9 tefachim high, the Chachamim say you don't have to get down to four, below 4 tefachim. You just have to get below the rove point. And once you're below the rove point, it is tahor. You don't have to get it down below 4. You just get it below the rove. Rove of 9 would be a little over 4.5. So as long as you're below the 4.5 threshold, then it's no longer an oven anymore, even though it's above 4 tefachim. And in the oven that is 7 tefachim high, then the halfway point is 3.5. Rove is just above 3.5. 4 tefachim is higher than that. And over there, the Chachamim just say, just get below 4 and you're okay. That's the way the Rashi and the Balei Tosfot learn it. The Rabbanan and Akula in both cases. You have to have the larger of less than a rove or less than 4 tefachim. Whichever is the bigger shiur, that's what you need to do in order to get yourself to be tahor. And that turns out to be the kula. In a bigger oven, you just have to get below the rove level, not before the fourth fachim, because that's the larger number. And in the case of a smaller oven, you just have to get below the fourth fachim level, because that's the larger number of the fourth fachim versus the rove. That's the way that Rashi and the Balei Tosafot learn it. And Tosafot says that it has to be read that way. D'lo adif shiarav mitkilato. How could the shayarim be more chamur than the beginning? if the beginning of an oven is a minimum of 4 tefachim, how could it be that you require to go down to, like say in an oven of 7, that you require to go down below 3.5 in order for it not to be an oven? It's not an oven if you didn't start out with 4, so then how could it be that the shiarim require to go even below that level of 4, down to 3.5 or below 3.5 in order for it to be tahor? Therefore, they think the Rabbanan and the Kula in both of these cases, the Rosh and the Rashmi Shantz both explain that the Rabbanan are the Chumra over here. And that means that if you have a oven that is 9 tefachim high, you have to take it below 4 tefachim in order for it to be tahor, even though going below the Rov, which just means you have to get under 4.5. And by the Shiva, by the oven that's 7 tefachim, you have to get below 3.5. Even though if you got below 4 already, it should have been fine. The Chumim say, no, you have to get below the Rov. So it's the lesser, rather than the way Rashi and Tosfot learned that it's getting below the greater of the two, according to the Rosh and the Rosh Mishantz, you have to get below the lesser of the Rov or 4 tefachim in order for it to be tahor. So those are the two ways to learn that answer of the Gemara over here. The Mishnah Achronim, Parakei of Kelim, Mishnah Zayin, explains why he thinks that Rashi's interpretation of the Gemara here has a deficit in it, and that is because he assumes that the Chachamim are disagreeing with Rabbi Meir when he says that Memahato Midalid Tfachim. And he says it's not clear from the Mishnah that that's the case. The Mishnah sounds like the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir are arguing about whether you have to pull off the Tfelah, or you don't have to pull off the Tfelah, nothing to do with the Dalid Tfachim. In addition, the fact that you have to cut this into thirds, if you believe that the first Mishnah and Mishnah Zion are speaking about the same thing, then if the Tanur here is 12 Tfachim high, and you cut it into thirds, there are pieces here that are 4 tefachim high. If they're 4 tefachim high, why should it be tahor over here? What does cutting into thirds do for you that the first Mishnah would then say is tahor? So the Gemara's answer over here is that it depends on which way you're cutting it. If you're cutting it horizontally, then as long as you get it below the threshold of 4 tefachim, you don't have the height of what would make a tanur. And so therefore, slicing it to a point where the remainder is below 4 tefachim automatically makes it that it's not a tanur, even without removing the tefillah. On the other hand, when it comes to slicing the tanur top to bottom vertically, over there, there is no shi'ur for the pieces that are around to make it tahor. The only requirement is it not be rove. As long as there's no rove, then it's called tanur yutatz, then tanur is broken. The only problem now is that you still have the height that is left. And in order to deal with the height problem, the Chachamim said you need to take off the tefillah, whereas Rabbi Meir believes that cutting it is sufficient to be considered yutatz, even without peeling off of the tefillah. And then that last statement of Rabbi Meir, that you only have to cut it down to 4 tefachim, it wouldn't necessarily be true that the Chachamim disagree with that. It would depend on the height of the tanur, because according to the Mishnah Rishona, who favors very heavily the position of the Rosh and the Rash Mishant, who say that if the Chachamim or the Chumra in both cases, then it would depend on the height of the tanur. If it was a tanur that was above 8 tefachim, then just getting it below 4 tefachim would be fine. If it was a tanur that was below that height, then you would have to get it below the robe for the chachamim. So they might disagree about that, but it doesn't sound like you would have to cut all the way down to the bottom according to the Mishnah Rishona, because the chachamim wouldn't disagree. And the whole idea is that there's a different conception about cutting it horizontally, where you're dealing with height, and removing the shem tanur because you don't have that height left in it, versus cutting it vertically, where there is no shiur for the pieces that are cut. It just has to be that there's no piece with a robe left in it. And then you have to figure out, how do I take away the shame tanur? For Rabbi Meir, that's it. By itself, that's enough. According to the Chachamim, I have to peel off the tefillah in order to get rid of the shame tanur, because otherwise the height itself gives it a shame tanur.
Now, Lishna Achrina, this is a totally different version of Rav Huna, which we started out, we finished in yesterday's daf, and what we started asking a question on, which is, Amar Rav Huna Mishum Rabbi Yishmael B'Rabbi Yossi. Rav Huna says, in the name of Rabbi Yishmael B'Rabbi Yossi, if you remember, Rashi says Mishum means he wasn't his Rebbe. He was just quoting a member from him, but he wasn't actually his Rebbe. Vafilu Shi'er Ba Kidei Maporet. Even if you have a Kidei Maporet left, it's still considered to be Batel. This is the opposite of what he said before. Before he said, if there's a Maporet left, then that's considered to be significant, and then it will remain Tamei. Whereas here, he's saying that even if there is a maporet left, a turban or an apron's worth left around that is in the miut, it will still be tahor. That's only true by a talit. Or chashiv. If you leave that much of the leather together, meaning that it's still attached, it's significant. And since it's significant, that won't make it tahor in the case of the leather. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, afilu or nami lo chashiv. Even by or, it's not considered significant. And the or is tahor once you reach the point of rov. Eidvei Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. And Rabbi Yochanan challenges Reish Lakish similar to what he did in yesterday's daf. Or Tamei Midras Chishev Alav L'Ritzua V'Sandalim. If you have a piece of leather that is Tamei Midras, means that it was Tamei from the being sat on by a Zav or by a Nida, then if you decide you want to make it into strips of leather for sandalim, for sandals, Kaven Shinat Manbo Ismail, once you put the knife to it to start cutting it, Tahor, Tiber Rabbi Yehuda. Yehuda says, once you start cutting it or begin to cut it for the slices, that's enough to make it Tahor. You needed to get it below 5 tefachim. When you get it below that 5 tefachim threshold, then it is tahor. Tosafot discussed this yesterday. 5 tefachim is the minimum shiur for sitting. Tumat midras for leather, the minimum shiur is 5 by 5 tefachim. So what it's suggesting over here is that if you get it below that 5 tefachim threshold, then there's no longer any tumat midras over here, because you got it below the threshold where leather will be classified as being mikabel tumah, or able to be mikabel tumah for tumat midras. But you see from here that there is a threshold by which, if you get below that threshold, then it is tahor. And Reish Lakish seemed to indicate that if you have kedei maporet left, if there's still a piece left there, then it is considered to be chashuv, and it's not tahor. So amai, why don't you say lema choshiv? Why don't you say it's still significant? Even when you get below 5 tefachim, it's still of a size that is significant enough to be kedei maporet, and therefore it should be considered that it's still tamei. Where it says, Achamai Skinan, the Kadboile, the Moshav Zav. Probably the Girsa should be, you can see here in the Oruch, that it is the Mishbazag, and that you need it for, and as the Oruch says over here, you want to use it for a Kiseishel Or. That you want to use it for a leather chair, and you want to use it for the seating on a leather chair. And the way that they translate it, Rashi has it here as Vlad Stura, or the more proper, you can see a little bit in the Oruch, something along this line, which is that it's falda, means folding, and stura, stool. It's a folding stool. They want to put the leather on a folding stool, so that leather then needs to be of a certain size to be useful. If you get it below 5 tefachim, it's no longer useful for the folding stool. You can't make a seat out of it, and that's why it's tahor over here. So it has to do, Reish Lakish is suggesting, it has to do with your intent. If your intent is to use it for something else, then enochanami, then cutting it below 5 tefachim wouldn't have sufficed, because you could still use that leather, and it's functional, and it's chashuv. But over here, where you have a particular need for it, and you want to use it as a seat, once you get it below 5 tefachim, you've ruined that purpose. And since you've ruined that purpose, it no longer is the kli that it was before, and it's no longer classified as a kli now, because it's not functional in the way that you wanted it to be functional. And given that, it is now tahor, even according to Reish Lakish, because that which is residual is not chashuv in the context of what you're using it for. All right, next Mishnah. Or, sheyesh alav kezayit basar. This goes back, we quoted this a number of times earlier in the Gemara, that if you have a hide that has a kezayit basar on it, hanogeya b'tziv hayotzei mimenu, if you touch the tziv that comes out of it, Rashi over here defines the tziv as rutsua utaltel hayotzei meoto basar. It's like a string, or like a twisty, twirly thing that comes out of the basar. It's some sort of stringy part of this basar that if you picked it up, it'd probably fall apart, but it's something that's still physically attached to the basar itself. And here on the side, you can see they bring the, so the shot brings, perish hashuman, hayotze min ha'or. It's the fat that comes out of the hide itself. V'yeshomim, imibshit ha'or, nishar lav kezayit basar, v'naga adam, birir, it's speaking about the liquid that leaches out of the nevela, or out of the hide that's there. So here are different definitions of what the tziv is. It's some sort of projectile that is coming out of the basar, whether it's the basar itself, like Rashi suggests over here, it's like a thin piece of the basar, or whether it's something from the hide that is leaching out, that is attached to it, which is that there's either some sort of liquid or some sort of fat that is extending from the basar, ubisara shekinegdo, or there's a hair that is on the hide that is opposite this kezayit basar, tamei. In that case, you are tamei. We discussed before in the Gemara that you're tamei because chalchule mechalchel, the hair leaves a hole in the skin or the hide that is there, and therefore it's acting as a shomer. And since it's a shomer, keneged, opposite the kezayit basar, then it functions to be like a yad to convey tuma and allow tuma to come into this item. And similarly, this little stringy thing that's coming off the basar, since it's directly attached to the basar, it functions like a yad in its ability to convey tuma from the item if it's an avela, or if it's a regular basar, it allows the tuma to reach it as tumat uchlim. Hayu alav kishnei chatzei zeitim. If you have a piece of hide or leather that has two half zeitim worth of basar that's left on it, obviously not touching each other, mitamei b'masa v'lo b'maga. Divrei Rabbi Shmuel, according to Rabbi Shmuel, you can't be tamei maga because you can't touch them separately and become tamei. Each one independently is a chatzi zayit. When you touch one, you're not tamei. When you touch the other one, you're also not tamei because you only touch the chatzi gazayit. We don't say that there's nogea achar nogea. When you touch and then touch something afterwards, that they will add up or sum up to a gazayit. But on the other hand, when you do masa, when you carry the actual item, you're carrying a full kazayit worth. Even though they're separate pieces, you're carrying a full kazayit worth. Rabbi Kiva Omer, lo b'maga v'lo b'masa. Rabbi Kiva disagrees and says there's no tumat maga and no tumat masa over here. Umoda Rabbi Kiva, b'shnei chatzei zeitim, shetachvan b'kisem. If you have two half zeitim of basar that are now stuck on a toothpick, so they're not touching each other, but they're held together on a toothpick, v'hissitan. And then you move them or you shook them, shehu tameh. Over there you are tameh. Pnei ma Rabbi Kiva meteher ba'or. Why does Rabbi Kiva meteher when it's on the hide and not when it's on the toothpick? Pnei sho'or mevatlan. He explains that when it's on the or, it's batel. It's nullified or insignificant in comparison to the hide. And therefore it's as if it doesn't exist. It's like it's or now and not basar. When it's on the toothpick, then there's no or there to be mevatelet. Then the two items exist in their own significant manner, and when you join them together to make them into a single entity, and therefore you'll be tamei carrying them in that way. The Baal Tosfot discussed that Rabbi Kiva over here does not only think that when you put a toothpick through them that you are chayav for masa, he thinks that you, even if you touch them, you would be chayav, and that's because Rabbi Kiva has a principle which we're going to see on the second half of today's daf, kosha enu b'maga, enu b'masa. If you don't tamei tumat maga, you're also not tamei tumat masa. And over here, in order to have tumat masa, you would have to have tumat maga. And therefore, what the Baal Tosfot would say is, el mishum de polig Rabbi Kiva Rabbi Shmuel. The only reason Rabbi Kiva did this over here is because he's arguing on Rabbi Shmuel. And in arguing on Rabbi Shmuel, he wants to address Rabbi Shmuel's case, which is tumat masa. And therefore, he speaks about two chatzei zeitim on a single toothpick. But, ein hachanami, even if they weren't on a toothpick and you touched them, there would have to be tumat maga, because that's a prerequisite for Rabbi Kiva to have Tumat Masa, that it has Tumat Maga also relevant by it. There are those that disagree and say that the Rambam does not agree with this, and says that the only time Rabbi Kiva requires that Tumat Maga be a prerequisite for Tumat Masa is when you speak about on a hide. That's where he says that din. But outside of that context, he doesn't have that requirement. And over here, the only time you'd be chayav for these two chatzei zeitim is if they're on a kisem. But if you touch them one at a time, you would not be tamei according to the Rambam's explanation, both in Mishnah Torah and in the Parashah Mishnayot, as opposed to what Tosafot is saying over here, that this din of Rabbi Kiva expands to all of his halachot, and therefore over here, just if he's chayav b'tumat masa, which heset is a subset of masa, then also you're going to be chayav for tumat maga here as well. Right now, Amar Ula, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Now we have a qualification in our Mishnah. Lo shanu ela platato chaya. It's only true if it was bitten off by an animal. Avalo platato sakin batil. But if it was taken off by a knife, it would be completely batel. So the first statement of the Mishnah that says that if you have a kazayit work together, then it's not batel, and it has significance. Ula qualifies that by saying that that's only true if the reason the basar was taken off was by an animal, meaning that the person wasn't involved with it. Since the person wasn't involved with it, he was not actively mevatel it. And therefore, when there is a kezayit together, it is significant. On the other hand, once you start to flay it, and there was a kezayit basar left when you were flaying, that itself is not significant because you actively flayed it, and your active flaying of it was means that you also were actively mevatel it, because that's your intent. When you're flaying, it's not to care about the basar that's attached to the hide. And even if there was a kazayit worth of basar that was aggregated into a single location, you would not be subject to tumat nevela, or it wouldn't be subject to tumat uchlim. Now, Tosafot over here says, well, if that's the explanation, what do we do with Rabbi Yehuda, who was in the first Mishnah of the Perek, who says that if you, mehusha kanaso, if you bring together a kazayit worth of basar, you are chayav. He's not going to fit according to this, according to Rabbi Shmuel or Rabbi Akiva. Here you're saying that when there's a kazayit basar to start with that's all aggregated, then it's not tamei. Then certainly if you bring it together, it's not going to be tamei. And then how does Rabbi Yehuda fit in according to this Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva? So Tosfot gives two answers. He says, "V'chia deif kinaso miplatato yachad kezayit." Is it better to have him aggregate a kezayit worth of basar than have it just be that when he cut it off, there was a kezayit basar left together? So he says, "V'esh lomarin hachanami." Maybe that is the case. Maybe it's different when you aggregate it together. You're showing active dismissal of the bittul. You're saying, "I really didn't want to be mevatel it," because you're doing an action that undermines it. Whereas when you just leave a kezayit there, maybe it's not significant because anything that's left after flaying is not considered to be significant. Inami, the day, Rabbi Yehuda Polig, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva. Or you have to suggest that according to this, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yehuda disagree. There's actually another Tana here, and he disagrees with Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva's explanation here that if you have a kezayit basar that was left after a flaying process, that they say that is not tamei. Rabbi Yehuda would disagree and say that it is tamei. And that would be a machloket tanaim according to this view of Ulam Rabbi Yochanan that the first case in our Mishnah is qualified by this statement. So Amar le Rav Nachman the Ula, Amar Rabbi Yochanan afilu kitarto. How big a piece can be left and Rabbi Yochanan is still going to say that it's not considered to be subject to tumat ochlim or it's not going to have tumat devela? Meaning that even if you leave a piece the size of a tarto, Rashi brings two possibilities as to what a tarto is, either rova kav, which is a size or measure, or he says lishnachriya kaf maznayim, a scale, meaning that the size that we use in the weighting of a scale. Amalayin, he said yes. Afilu kinafio, even the size of a sieve, if that size of basar was left, it still would not be a problem. Amalayin, yeah. Amalay hailukim, imamarli Rabbi Yochanan mipume. If I heard this directly from Yochanan, loitzaitinamle, I wouldn't listen to him. So here Ula is quoting Rabbi Yochanan, and Rav Nachman's questioning him, based on that sheet that's saying, no matter how much basar you leave when you flay the animal, it's just not going to be subject to tumat ochlim, it's batel to the or completely because of the fact that you actively flayed it, and that means by definition you don't care about the basar that is there. And he keeps saying yes, no matter how big the piece of basar is. Rav Nachman says that's completely irrational. That cannot be the proper explanation over here. And therefore he says, even if Rabbi Yochanan told me that, I would not agree with it. He saw like Rabbi Oshaya. When Rabbi Oshaya went up to Eretz Yisrael, Ashkechlev the Rabbi Ami, he found Rabbi Ami, Amar Alishmatate Kameh. He said over all of the memra that we just had, Hachi Amar Ula, Vahachar Delei Rav Nachman. Here's Ula's explanation that he gave of Rabbi Yochanan's statement, and here's Rav Nachman's response to it. Amalei, Umishum de Rav Nachman, Chatne de Bein Nasiya. Just because Rav Nachman is the son-in-law of the Nasi, whom Zalzo Bishmaite de Rabbi Yochanan, he thinks he can just disparage the statements of Rabbi Yochanan. So this is a comment about Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman was a dayan, an important dayan, a Talmud Chacham Gadol, but he was also a person that had connected to the political echelons because he was married into the family of the Reish Galuta. Not only was he of himself a big Talmud Chacham and a big dayan, that was only enhanced by the fact that he was married into a family that had political power. Rabbi Ami's comment is that maybe Rav Nachman dismissing Rabbi Yochanan because he thinks he is an important person, and therefore he can just dismiss Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi Ami, and those that are in Eretz Yisrael, Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan, would not be so sanguine about speaking Rabbi Yochanan that way and dismissing a memra of Rabbi Yochanan. Zimnin, Ashkechei Diyoti B'kamar La'aseifu. Then later on, Rabbi Oshaya saw Rabbi Ami, and Rabbi Ami was saying over this memra of Rabbi Yochanan, but he was saying it on the latter half of the Mishnah. Hayu alav shnei chatzei zeitim. It has two Chatzi zeitim on it, mitamim b'masa. Hello b'maga, divi Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says, then you have tumat masa then, because when you lift them together, but maga you can't have, because they're separate. Rabbi Kiva omer, lo b'maga v'lo b'masa. Rabbi Kiva says, neither of them apply over here. Am Rabbi Yochanan, lo shanu, ela platato chaya. That's only true if the chatzi zeitim were there because it was bitten off by an animal, and that was the basar that was left there. But platato sakin, batel, if it was cut off when the flame process, even if you have two chatzin zeitim, Rabbi Shmuel would agree that there's no tumat masa because it's batel to the or. Basically, he would agree with Rabbi Kiva in that case. Samarlei, mara seifa matnilo? So now Rabbi Oshaya says to Rabbi Ami, you have Rabbi Yochanan's statement on the seifa? Amalein? He says, yeah, of course. That's where it was said. Velo ula aresha amra? Ni alaychu? Wait a minute. So then Rabbi Ami says back to him, wait, when Ula told you it over, he told you over about the ratio of the Mishnah, which is the way that we read it until now. and the understanding that Rav Nachman had of Ula's statement when Ula was telling it to Rav Nachman, as well as Rav Oshia, when he brought it to Rav Yami, he was saying it over based on the Reisha. Amalei in. So Rav Oshia says back to him, yeah, when Ula said it over, he said it on the Reisha. Amalei Elukim. Now Rav Yami says, I swear by Hashem, Imar li Yoshua ben Nun mishmei lo tzaydin alei. Even if Yoshua ben Nun had told me this information, I wouldn't have listened to him. So now Rav Yami is sounding like Rav Nachman. Now he suddenly understands why Rav Nachman rejected that view, is because Ula quoted it on the Reisha of the Mishnah. And Rabbi Yami says, you're right. If it was quoted on the Reisha of the Mishnah, that's not what Rabbi Yochanan said, and it makes no sense. And that's why Rabbi Nachman obviously rejected it. I understood Rabbi Yochanan's statement to be on the Seifa. And the Masora that we have is that it's on the Seifa of the Mishnah. There, I think that it's a plausible understanding, because there, the pieces that are left are small pieces. And therefore, you can differentiate between whether it came off by a Chaya or came off by flame. But if you say it on the Reisha, you're talking about significant pieces. And that's what Rabbi Nachman was challenging Ula with. Meaning that if you say on the Reisha, how big a piece is it before it becomes not batel? And Ula says, well, there's no bittul there, because when you flay it, it's automatically batel. And then Rav Nachman says, that's irrational, illogical, and I can't accept it. And now Rabbi Yami is agreeing that if it was said on the Reisha, it doesn't make sense. Kiyate Ravin, b'chol nechute, whether it's nechute yama, when Ravin came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, nechute means those that descend. Nechute yama means whether they came up from the other areas, or nechute here means those that descended to Bavel. Amru HaReisha, they quoted Rabbi Yochanan as saying it on the Reisha. I mean, they confirm what Ula said. Rabbi Yami assumed that it was on the Seifa, and therefore now he thinks that Rav Nachman's criticism was correct. Nevertheless, Ula's explanation, and now we're saying anybody else who came and brought a memra from Rabbi Yochanan, also said that it was a reference to the Reisha. Velakasho, but that's the case, then how can you explain it? I mean, Rav Nachman's challenge that no matter what the size of the basar is, then it's still going to be batel because you flayed it. Kid the Amar of Papa, that's not a problem. Meirudat, that's when it's flattened out. Achanami Meirudat, we're going to see Rav Papa later on in today's daf. But as Rashi explains over here, Meirudat means dak, it's very thin. Kalush, it's weak. Ve'aroch, and it's very long. Ve'rachav, and very wide. Meaning that it is a kazayit worth of basar that is flattened against the hide itself. It's not like there's a ball or a big piece of basar that's sticking onto the hide. It's very flat and spread out across the entire hide. It's all attached. It's touching it all over. So there's a kazayit worth together. But since it's so thin, weak, and plastered flat onto the hide, that's why it's not mitzdareif in order to be a kazayit, or it's batel. Because when someone flays the animal, they expect that a certain amount of basar will come off with the flaying of it. Better you do it, the less basar there is. But this thin layer of basar, even if it together adds up to a kazayit, is not significant. And that is palatable, or possibly logical, that you could say such a thing, that Rabbi Yochanan would have said, that if it was flayed, it's batel, because even though it's big, bigger than a kazayit, bigger than a tarto, or bigger than a nafio, all those cases are going to say batel because of the nature of this item. It's not an aggregated piece or ball in one place. It's flat, thin, stretched out over the entirety of the hide. And that's why he considers it to be batel. All right, now, hayu alav shnei chatzei zitim. Amar barpado lo shanu elo miachura. That's only true when touching the hide side. Aval milefanav, if he touches the flesh side, yesh nogeya b'chol zer v'nogeya. Then there is a concept of touching an item, and then subsequently touching it and adding up to the kazayit that you need. Rabbi Yochanan says you can't add it up. So now, what they're suggesting over here is that where Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva say there's no tumat maga over here, that's only true when you're touching the back of the hide, when you're touching the hide itself. Because then the hide either has to be a yad or has to be a shomer. We already said that the minimum size for a yad is a kazayit, and for a shomer, it sounded like a pull was the minimum size. So based on that, the skin or the hide could still be a shomer. If that's the case, you should be able to come to me if you touch it, because the shomer is able to convey tuma or allow tuma to go through. And therefore, touching it and then being touching it again should have been sufficient to make you to me. Yet, Barpada says if you touch the hide side, you're not to me. You touch the basar side, you are to me. So Rashi and Tosafot seconds this explain that Barpada clearly holds, like the Tanakama of the Acherim before, that say that there is a minimum shear for a shomer as well of a kazayit. And so therefore, since there's a minimum shear for both a shomer and a yad of a kazayit, here where you have less than a kazayit, there is no shomer, there is no yad, And that's why when you touch the hide side of it, you're not tameh, because there's no yad, there's no shomer. That means that you're not touching the basar, you're not going to be tameh. On the other hand, if it's on the basar side of the hide and you touch the basar, there, according to Bar Podo, yesh nogeah v'chozer menogeah. If you have one hand on one chati gezayit and the other hand on the other chati gezayit, they can be mitzdareif. They can be added together to get to you to the full gezayit. It doesn't matter that you're touching one chati gezayit with this hand and another chati gezayit with the other hand. We can't be mitzdareif, those two nigiot, those two different touchings together to create a single gezayit. You need one nigiah that's touching a gezayit, not two nigiot that are each touching a chati gezayit. Rabbi Yochanan says it makes no difference whether you're on the hide side or the flesh side of it. If you're chuzer and nogeya, we don't add up two chatzi zedim. You're not going to be tamei, according to Rabbi Yochanan. You need to touch a whole kazayit at once in order to be tamei. But as Rabbi Yochanan the tamei, Rabbi Yochanan's l'shita do, domai Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus, amru devar echad. These two tanaim are of the same position. Rabbi Shmuel had amran, Rabbi Shmuel's in our Mishnah. Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus did not. Kol mitamim ba'ohel. Anything that makes an ohel tamei, so we're going to use a kazayit basar here. There are many items that are mentioned in the Mishnayot and Ohelot that may give tumat ohel. So we're going to assume here it's a kazayit basar min amet, which makes tumat ohel. Shenechleku, that was split in half, bechnisan letoch habayit, and then they were taken into the ohel. Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus mitaher. Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus says you don't have a kazayit basar there. You have a chatzi kazayit here and a chatzi kazayit there. The ohel does not aggregate them to make them into a single kazayit. And therefore, there's no tumat ohel. But chamim itamim. And chamim say you are tamei because we look at the ohel as being ma'ahil ala kazayit basar. Yes, one chatzi zayit's there and one chatzi zayit's there, but the ohel aggregates them into a single kazayit, and now you have a kazayit basar amet, and therefore there is tumat ohel. So lav amar Rabbi Yudosa ben Hyrcanus hatam ein ma'ahil b'chozer ma'ahil. What's clear from Rabbi Yudosa ben Hyrcanus is that the ohel over there does not serve to aggregate the two pieces, even though there's an ohel on one chatzi gezayit and an ohel on the other chatzi gezayit. We don't aggregate them to make them a single gezayit. Hachinami, so too in our case, ein nogeya v'chozer v'nogeya. So too over here, the two touches on each of the chatzi gezayitim are not going to be aggregated to get you to a single gezayit. And Tosfos points out that Rabbi Shmuel does believe when you carry them together that they are mitzdareif. Now, if he holds like Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus, then why is ohel not successful at aggregating them, but masa is successful at aggregating them? So Bayit Tosfos would say, you're going to see in the upcoming Gemara, there's a riboy of yitma by the din of masa nevela. That riboy is that nisiya, or that masa, has the ability to aggregate where ohel does not have that ability to aggregate because of an extra riboy by nosei. Umi Rabbi Dos ben Hyrcanus ki Rabbi Yishmael. Well, the fact that Rabbi Dos ben Hyrcanus now is equated to Rabbi Yishmael according to Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbonon ki Rabbi Akiva. Then that means that the Rabbonon hold like Rabbi Akiva. Vaha Rabbi Akiva tahorei kam taher. Wait a minute. In our Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva says that it is tahor. The Rachamim over there in the case of Ohel say you are tamei. When it says, ad kalon kam taher Rabbi Akiva ala ba'or. Rabbi Akiva's position is unique to the case where it's on a hide because it's batel, as he says, to the or. Aval be'alma mitamei. But in general, he believes that you can be chuzer v'nogeya, or you can aggregate two disparate pieces. Dim tani seifa, like it says in the latter part of the Mishnah, umoda Rabbi Akiva bebet chatzei zeitim shetachman v'kisem v'sitam shutamei. That if you have a toothpick that's going through two chatzei zeitim, then they can be aggregated to make it into a single nanti. Umimpnei ma Rabbi Akiva mitayer ba'or. So then why is Rabbi Akiva mitayer by the hide if he believes you can aggregate two disparate pieces to make up a single shiur? Because the or is nullifies them or makes them insignificant. That's the only reason that he says you're tor. But absent that case of the or, he would believe that you can aggregate two subpar shiurim into a single shiur to get you to that minimum shiur that you need. And you see that by his tachvan, where you're carrying them together. And the Bayit Tosavot made it clear before that he would believe that's even true by tumat maga as well. That if you're touching two chatzi gezeitim, you would be tamei. That then makes sense that he holds, or that he matches, according to Rabbi Yochanan, with the position of the Rabbanon over here, that say you can be mahil, v'chozeru mahil. Right now, the Gemara continues and says, Meitiv Rabu Kva Bar Chamo, v'nivlatam. It says in the Pasuk in Parshat Shmini, u'le'ela titamu, kolonogeya v'nivlatam, yitma ad arev. Anybody who touches their nivela, their carcass, will be tamei ad arev, v'cholosei nivlatam, yichabes bagadav, v'tamei ad arev. So there's the din of Nigiyah and the din of Nisiyah. You become Tamei from both of them when the object of your nigiyah, or the object of your nisiyah, is a nevela. Now, the Gemara darshins, b'nivlatam, below b'or sheyesh alav bet chatzei zeitim. It's true of a nevela, but not about a hide that has two half zeitim on it. Yachol afi masa, you would think that the din of masa does not apply when you have two chatzei zeitim on or. Tamalomar, v'anosei yitma. The nosei, the one who carries it, is tamei. Dibei Rabbi Yishmael. So Rabbi Yishmael darshins from the pasuk that even though tumat maga doesn't apply when you have two chatzei zeitim, tumat masa does have application. And tells what it seems to indicate it's from the extraneous wording that's there. It could have just said, kolon agev nivetam yitma ad arev, v'cholon nosei yichabes medavet yitma ad arev. The fact that he uses vitamei, v'cholon nosei, both of those seem to indicate that there's more included in nosei than there was included in nogeya. And for that reason, Rabbi Yishmael believes that even though by tumat maga, there's no application of shnei chatzei zeitim and aggregate them when you touch both, one on each hand, you're touching a chatzei zeit, it doesn't aggregate. Nevertheless, when you're nosei otam, they do get aggregated. And as the Baal Tosfot will point out, that Rabbi Akiva doesn't need a pasuk because Rabbi Akiva is not a chiddush over here, because he believes that the or is mevatel them. They don't even exist as basar. Don't exist as basar. It doesn't matter for tumat maga or tumat masa. There's no relevance over here. Rabbi Akiva omer, hanogea venosei. Etche baal lichlal maga, baal lichlal masa. Lo baal lichlal maga, lo baal lichlal masa. This is what we mentioned earlier in the Gemara, that Rabbi Akiva sees a hekesh between negiyah and nisiyah, because they're written next to each other. They're juxtaposed in the psukim. And therefore, something that has tumat maga has tumat masa. You don't have tumat maga, you don't have tumat masa. And over here, you don't have tumat maga, as Rabbi Yishmael says. Therefore, there's no tumat masa. So, v'im ito, and if that's correct, harei baal lichlal maga milefanav. Wait a minute. That's not exactly true. According to Rabbi Arpado's explanation of Rabbi Yishmael, that's only true when you touch the hide side of the flesh. But if you touch the flesh itself, then you would aggregate two chatzei zeitim, and there would be tumat maga. That means that it does have tumat maga. If it has tumat maga, then according to Rabbi Akiva, it should have tumat masa. Amarova, no, that's easy to explain. Hachi kamar. Etche ba mechla maga bechol tzad. Anything that has tumat maga, no matter where you touch it, ba lechla masa, then it has tumat masa. Lo ba lechla maga bechol tzad. If it doesn't get tumat maga from all directions, lo ba lechla masa, then it doesn't attain tumat masa. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva says to Rabbi Yishmael, l'shita tcha, even according to your shita, there should be no tumat masa. Me, I believe it's batel and doesn't even exist. So of course there's no tumat masa. But even according to you, who says there is no tumat maga, there shouldn't be any tumat masa, because there's a parallel or correlation between maga and masa. And when I say parallel, it means that it has to be fully tumat maga, both from touching the hide side and the basar side. If that was the case, then there should be tumat masa. But here where that's not the case, then there should be no tumat masa. So by me name, Rav Avya Sava mi Rabba bar Rav Huna. So Rav Avya Sava came to Rabba bar Huna and asked him, kulit, which we're going to see in tomorrow's Mishnah, which is the bone that is attached to the pelvic bone in the animal. It's the highest of the three bones of the leg of the animal. As Rashi noted before, that it has moch. It has a lot of marrow in it. Stuma. It's completely sealed. The Rabbi Shmuel, mau shetitame. What's the din according to Rabbi Shmuel? If you carry such a bone, are you tame? Itle the Rabbi Shmuel. Does Rabbi Shmuel hold of the principle to baal lichlal maga, baal lichlal masa? That principle that Rabbi Akiva lays out, he subscribes to it. And therefore, lo baal lichlal maga, lo baal lichlal masa. And over here, where the marrow is sealed into the bone, since you can't have tumat maga, you also can't have tumat masa. And over here in our Mishnah, the reason that he says that there is tumat masa is because there is a manifestation, according to Bar Pada, of tumat maga. Obviously, Rav Avya holds like Bar Pada that Rabbi Shmuel only said his statement with regards to touching on the hide side, not touching it on the flesh side. Had you touched it on the flesh side, you would be tamei tumat maga, and that would be sufficient to say that that tumaga leads to tumat masa, or dilma, lately. Or maybe he doesn't hold of this at all, and therefore there's no need to worry about tumat maga at all. He just thinks that tumat masa is completely independent of tumat maga. Amalei urva parach. Yeah, you see that raven over there? You see that bird flying over there? He distracted him and he didn't answer the question. Amalei rova brei. Rova rabba bar Rav Huna's son says to him, v'lav hainu rav avya saba mi pumpadita. Wasn't that the great Rav Avya Saba from Pumbedita, the Mishabachlan Marbigave, the Gavarabu, that you always speak about him in such high regard, and that you compliment him and that he's a great man? Amalei, ani ayom, samchuni ba'ashishot. Today, they held me up with the stout trunks or the thick pieces of wood. So Rashi claims, and it might be that Rashi's interpretation is laying on top of the interpretation of the Gaonim, but Rashi claims that he just gave the drusha for the regel, and therefore I'm tired, I'm wiped out. And that's what it means, some chuni bashi shot, that I now have to lean on something, or I'm tired and I need to lean. He asked me a question that needs thought and consideration. And so Rabbi Bar Rav Huna was not just going to give him some quick answer or thoughtless response, because he knew that it was a good question and he really needed to think about it. And he didn't have the strength or the ability to do it now. And therefore, he didn't answer. He didn't just give some pat answer in order to dismiss it. He wanted to give a proper answer. And he says, I'm just too tired to do that. I can't do that now. That's how Rashi describes it. The Gaonim say that some chuni b'shishot means that they put me up with the big trunks, that he was appointed to be the Rosh Hashiva on that day. Since he was appointed Rosh Hashiva that day, he was overwhelmed and he couldn't answer the question because he didn't have his head or his wits about him in order to do that. That might be correlated with what Rashi is saying, is that the reason they appointed him to Rosh Hashiva that day was because with the Shabbat HaRegel, Rav Chisda had passed away and they needed somebody to give the drosha. And they appointed Rabbi Bar Rav Huna to give the drusha. So he was overwhelmed from the fact that he was appointed Rosh Hashiva and he had given the drusha for the regel. And therefore he didn't have his wits about him to answer the question. So the Gemara leaves it as an unresolved issue and never addresses whether Rabbi Yishmael subscribes to that position of Rabbi Akiva about Tumat Maga being a prerequisite for Tumat Masa, whether he doesn't hold of it at all. Amar Ula, Shnei Chatzi Zeitim Shetachvan Bikisem. If you have two half Zeitim that are on a toothpick, if you walk around with them all day, you are a tohor. My taima. You look in the Torah, both in Pasuk Chafei and in Pasuk Chafchet, in Perek Yud Aleph in Shmini, when it speaks about carrying a nevela, it says, v'chol anosei min niblatam yichabes begadav v'tamei adarev in Chafei. In Chafchet, it says, anosei niblatam yichabes begadav v'tamei adarev t'mei mei malachem. Both of those cases, the word nosei is spelled chaser without the vav in it. Had you had a vav in it, it would be clear that it was nosei. Without the vav in it, you would read it as either vinasa, or the way Rashi says that you would read it as vinisa. And that's what the Gemara says over here. Ti vinisa, v'karina nosei. Vina nosei, v'hu de nisa, bevat achat. The nosei means carrying it in any way. Nisa means that it is being carried. It is being carried implies that there's a single entity that is being carried. Nosei means that the subject is carrying an object, and the object can be carried even if it's an aggregated amount, even if it's not a single entity. So the question is the focus on the nosei, the one who's carrying it, and he carries whatever is being carried. Or nisa, it means that the object is being carried, and then it has to be a single object that's being carried. And so the Gemara says that the difference between the kri and the ktiv forces you to say that even the nosei, when you carry it, it has to be dumya, it has to be similar to nisa. And nisa means that it's done in a single carrying. So it's not. Hayu alav shnei chatzi zeitim mitamim b'masa v'lo b'maga divi Rabbi Shmuel. So according to Rabbi Shmuel, if you have two chatzi zeitim that are on a piece of ore, they're mitamim b'masa and not b'maga divi Rabbi Shmuel. Amai v'halav nisa. Who? Wait, that doesn't conform with Ula's requirement that it be nisa, that it be carried in one shot, meaning that they be attached. Amar papa b'mirudad. This goes back to what we saw at the top of the amud here, that we quoted from Rav Papa, that's a case that it was all attached, Bimrudad, where it's flat and very thin on here. This is the original statement of Rav Papa, Bimrudad, where it's very thin, and it is attached, but not completely attached. Tosfot is very bothered by this, because he says, Rabbi Shmuel's opinion is that there's no Tumat Maga, but there is Tumat Masa. If Mirudad makes it that they're attached now, to the point where it's considered to be a single entity for Masa, then why isn't it a single entity for Maga as well? And vice versa. If it's not good enough for Maga, why is it good enough for Masa? So Tosfot comes up with a compromise and says that there is Mirudad, this very thin piece of Basar that connects the two Zeitim over here, in such a way that if you lifted it up from the either smaller piece or the part that is Mirudad, it would fall away. If you picked up the bigger piece, it would pull the other piece along with it. But if you picked up the smaller piece, it would not pull it along with it. That's based on a Mishnah in the end of Uksin, where there's a machloket as to what is considered a chibur. Is it when you pick up the bigger piece, the smaller piece comes along, that's enough to be considered a chibur? Or even if you pick up the smaller piece, it picks up the bigger piece, that's what you need, or that's the qualification to be a chibur. So Tosfot, based on that, says that's the situation over here. That when you pick up the smaller piece, the bigger piece doesn't come along with it. There it's not mitamei maga. By the nosei, There's no definition or need for there to be an actual chibur that makes it physically, that you're able to pick them up together. It just has to be any chibur. Any chibur makes a nisa, makes it that it's a single entity that's being carried. So as long as there's a connection between them, that's enough to make it a carried object. On the other hand, in terms of tumat maga, you need them actually to be physically touching and strong enough connection that whereby when you pick up one, it picks up the other.
The Ramban points out that now it's strange because the Gemara before said that the Reish is talking about Merudad, and now the Seif is talking about Merudad. If that's the case, why is there a difference in Rabbi Shmuel's opinion in the Reisha versus his opinion in the Seifa? And therefore, the Ramban comes to the conclusion that there are different types of Merudad. Merudad in the Reisha, where it is a chibur for Maga, is in a case where it's strong enough that if you pick up the smaller piece, the larger piece would come along with it, meaning that it's a real chibur that generates the chibur of Maga. Whereas in the Seifa, it's a case where it's a much weaker Merudad or flat piece that's attaching it, and there if you picked up the smaller piece, the larger piece would not come along with it. Therefore, it's not sufficient to create a chibur for Maga, but it's only sufficient to creating this Nisa, like we just said in the Balei HaTosafot.
So Tashma, Moda Rabbi Kiva b'shnei chatzi zetim sh'tachman b'kiseim v'sitan sh'utame. So this seems to be in direct opposition to what Ula says, because Rabbi Kiva agrees that when you have a toothpick through two chatzi zetim, if you're mesit them, if you move them, shake them, then that's considered like tumat masa, and you are tamei. Amai, va'alav nisahu. Over there, they're two separate pieces. And so why is it considered to be nisa that Ula requires? Achinami mirudad. He gives the same qualification, which is that they're attached by a thin film or a thin piece of basar. Kitanae, this statement of Ula is actually a machloket tanaim. Echad anogea, echad mesit. One who touches, and one who moves or shakes these two chatzi zetim, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, afa nosei, even someone who carries it. Atu nosei la mesitu, aren't nosei mesit two sides of the same coin. One is just physically lifting it up, and the other one is causing it to move through using another object to reach them and carry them. So you're not carrying them directly, you're carrying them on the stick or at the end of a stick or through something, you're causing them to move. Elav hachikamar. Isn't the proper way to read the Braita, echad anogea, v'echad amisit, below nisa? That if you touch it, or you move it, without them being connected, meaning it's not a single entity, then according to the Tanakama, you are tamei. V'atir Rabbi Eliezer, liv meimar, v'hu denisa. And when he says over there, af nosei, it means v'hu denisa, as long as they're attached, or as long as there's some connection between them. Umay af, then why do you use the word af? Af nisa means it sounds like also. It's not also. He's saying that this is the definition. Ema behu denisa. He says, leave out the word af, and it should say behu denisa. That means that only if they were aggregated or they were single piece in some way, there was a chibur between them. Tosafot is perplexed by why the Gemara just doesn't learn the opposite way around and say that the chachamim are the ones who require the nisa, and that's why they say, nogeya ve mesit, and nogeya dumi de mesit, just like nogeya has to be aggregated, so too the mesit has to be aggregated. And then Rabbi Eliezer comes along and says, Afa nose. Even if you carry it without them being aggregated, it would be chayav, and the Braita would read much more simply in that case. So Tosafot says, Nira the Sabar Ashas, de mesit b'chol inyan, afilu ein nisa, that mesit does not have the requirement of nisa, v'kein dachakla for eshkein, and that's why it forced Braita to go the other way, because mesit, according to this, has a kula that Nisa does not have. Nisa needs, the Nosei has to be Nisa, has to be Bevat Achad, has to be attached some way, although Mesit does not have that requirement. Therefore, the Chachamim use the Lashon of Mesit clearly believe that there's no requirement for Nisa, whereas Rabbi Eliezer, who says Nosei, is clearly indicating something connected to Nisa, because it's not meaningful in the context of Hesed to say that Nisa is Tamei, because certainly it'll be Tamei. Because Mesit is it's a more removed form of Nosei, and therefore if you're Tamei for Heset, you're clearly Tamei for Nosei. And so therefore when he says Afa Nosei, it must be that he's adding some other requirement, and that requirement is that it is Nisa. And therefore you see there's a machlok between the Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer as to whether you require Nisa, the item be a single entity, which Rabbi Eliezer says is the case, and that's what Ula is saying. And the Chachamim disagree and say you don't have that requirement of Nisa. And that would be the way that we explain Rishmon, where we keep in the Mishnah if you didn't hold like Ula. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the bottom of Kuf Chav Dalet Amud Bet.